Welcome to Self-Published Success, a show catered specifically to the innovators and entrepreneurs who sought creative control over their titles, chose self-publishing over traditional, and found overwhelming success in the process. In this show, we will introduce these risk takers and ask them a variety of questions. Why did you choose self-publishing? What were your results? And most importantly, what are some secrets to success? Self-Published Success is designed to get your creative juices flowing, to get you energized and excited for the road to authorship ahead. So sit back, grab your trusted pen and notepad, and get ready to gain tips that will help you along your own self-publishing journey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Self-Published Success, a show that highlights forward-thinking authors who chose self-publishing over traditional and found success in doing so. My name is John Feldman, founder of Visionary Literary, and your host for today's show. Our guest today is Chris Glatis. Chris is an award-winning filmmaker, a lifelong seeker, the author of When Your Mind Screams, Finding Peace and Confidence in the Midst of Anxiety. After being diagnosed with anxiety disorder in college, he became determined to overcome what he initially thought was weakness. He shares a story through his book, his films, and is here today to show you, the author, how your biggest weakness can become your greatest teacher. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for bringing me on board.
Yeah, we are excited to have you. So most of our conversations are about nonfiction books, which you've written, but being LA-based and a lot of your award-winning films and screenwriting, that's something that we have great interest in. So we're really excited about this conversation. But before we kick that off, why don't you tell us a little bit more about you and what got you into writing and filmmaking?
You know, I went to grew up on the East Coast, went to school in undergrad school in North Carolina. And you know, I started off as a business major, and I just started to, I don't know if it's because I thought it was an easier path, like to do the creative stuff. I actually got involved in theater and made my first film in undergraduate school. I just kind of got the bug. I'm sure, like, if you talk to artists, it's just something, it's just all of a sudden, it's just pulling stuff out of thin air and just creating. I just got the bug. So I started looking at film schools and chose one that was close to my hometown of Bethesda, Maryland, which was American University. I went to graduate school there. And then I just started to hone my skills there. You know, they didn't really have a specific, you don't really pick a specific track there of, you know, screenwriting, directing or whatever. It's just, they really give you an all-around approach. That might've changed since I went there. And it really gives you an opportunity to make mistakes and find your path, you know, and just, and work collaboratively with others. So that's kind of where it all started.
That's exciting. The collaborative approach is something that has to be fun, especially in the screenwriting and the filmmaking area. So before we hit record, you mentioned that you kind of work out of home most of the time, and I do the same. So getting out, collaborating, when it comes to writing and being creative and filmmaking, that has to be so important, doesn't it? Just to get out and to have communications, interactions with others.
Yeah, you know, that's why I think I was drawn. My true love was writing, because I tend to be more of an introvert. I think a lot of writers tend to be a little bit more introverted.
Agreed.
And I love all I need really was a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper. Obviously we have computers now and laptops and iPads, and we don't really need anything else to write. However, it can also become very lonely, insular. You're writing in a vacuum. You need to be bouncing these ideas off of people. And that's one reason why I think I went into directing as well, is that you find a bunch of people who have a common vision, and just being on a set with a bunch of different people, it's maddening and can be nerve-wracking, but it's also, you're interacting with other people and you're not sitting just behind your desk at home. And I think to kind of go back and forth between those is really, you know, it's almost like go off in the cabin, write your story, and then come out and share it and get other people to, also you're getting other people to give you they're a sounding board. You know, yeah. they might have ideas that might be better than your idea, you know? And so, you know, you are the writer, you are the director. You take everything in and then decide what you think is best for the project. And it's a challenge. It's a real challenge because yes. you have time constraints where in writing, you can kind of just, you know, if you're not writing for hire, you can just write forever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point too. Cause when we, like you said, when we're writing, it is basically all the time we want, especially like you were saying for like a spec script, you take all the time you want because, you know, it's you and it's your time. So the transition from going to school in Maryland, correct?
Yeah. Well, I went to school, undergraduate school in North Carolina, and then DC. I went Washington, DC. I went to graduate school.
Okay. So then now you are LA based, correct?
Correct. Correct.
So what was that, just being a writer and wanting to do the, you know, the screenwriting or the filmmaking, what was that process like? Because I know that a lot of authors, you know, when you think about making money, typically, and especially for the listeners of this show, it's about book writing. But filmmaking is very, very interesting. It's very creative. So what took you from, you know, writing and into the actual filmmaking process?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like I've come full circle because, you know, back then I was just a frustrated artist and, you know, I still get frustrated every other day about, you know, about wanting to get projects done and get them out there and be on the set. You know, what I did was I took a really traditional route for a while, you know, sending scripts out, you know, to agents, producers, all that sort of thing. And then I just, you know, kind of thought like, well, I can do this. I can assemble a group of people and do this on my own. You know, it's going to require money and we have to go raise that money. But you know, I'm not talking $1 million. I mean, $50,000, $100,000, which is still a lot of money. But if you get a bunch of people to help you, and a lot of times they're family members, you can go out and do it on your own. The great thing nowadays is not only can you do that cheaper because everything's digital, you literally, a buddy of mine always tells me, he's like, you have a film camera in your hand now. We didn't have this back then. And it's still a hard process. You still have to light, write, and do all that, but you can get content out very quickly. You can cut out the middleman. You don't need an agent. You see these guys on YouTube. They're telling, they might not be doing what I'm doing, but they're getting content out quickly and they're getting feedback and they're engaging with an audience. And so I'm taking my own advice. I'm going to go back to just doing my own things. Because right now, as you might not know, the Writers Guild is striking. They're saying the Directors Guild is going to strike. SAG might strike. So we might not have anything going on for till the end of the year, to beginning of next year. So it's obviously a great opportunity to do your own stuff, you know? And so it's scary, but I think it's the fastest way to really get noticed and also feed your creativity, you know, so it doesn't feel like your projects are stillborn.
Yeah, that's very important, that last part too. You can still be creative. And so I don't know as much about like Hollywood and then the film production world as I do book publishing, but basically what we've always talked about on this show and what we'll talk about with you in a little bit because of the way in which you published your book, but doing things on your own, it's so much more accessible now. And some of the key things you were just mentioning there is to retain control, right? So you retain control of your work, but right now you're talking about these strikes going on, you're retaining control of your income and, you know, how you're going to live. If you were to rely on the traditional process, which is to be, you know, a SAG writer or, you know, Writers Guild writer, then maybe you wouldn't be able to go out on your own and to do things on your own and to keep that creativity alive. So being able to self-publish a book, to self-produce, to self-create a film, like you were saying, to have all these streaming platforms, YouTube included, that you can publish this content on, is really important. Just the whole landscape of publishing is changing. So,
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's something that I heard from everyone when I was trying, you know, first of all, the traditional publishing route is really hard. It's really hard. And you have to have a proposal and all that. I kind of went the opposite, right? Just started writing.
Yeah.
And yes, you have control. You know, I don't think book publishing is a big, big money-making business, but you will make more money than you will with a traditional publisher. And you know, I think the biggest thing is, as far as an esteem issue, is that you're not waiting for someone to say, you're okay, you can write, and we're going to let you write.
Yes.
Because that's not the way, you know, look, you're going to stumble, fall. You might not write something great the first time around, but you know, we give these gatekeepers so much power. And I've done it for years, and I think that's shifting now on book publishing, filmmaking. And you know what? You might end up at that place eventually. You might end up a publisher chasing you. You know, people write short stories online, and then they have publishers come to them, you know, on Reddit or subreddit. Publishers come to them and say, we love your stuff. We want to package it in a book, you know. So you might still end up that way, but you're getting your stuff out and you're getting better as a writer at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. So I do also, I want to talk about your book. And like you were saying, you just started writing your book. So the information inside your book, When Your Mind Screams, is very important to you. It's close to you. So you did just start writing. You didn't want to, I mean, you could have put together a proposal and did the whole literary agent search. You know, that could have taken months or years, but you just sat down and you started writing because it's something that you're passionate about, something that you know about. So take us through that. Like, what was the moment where you thought, you know, going back to when you were diagnosed in college, what was the moment where you were like, I just want to write this all down? What was that like?
Yeah, it was, you know, I probably about 5-6 years ago, it took me a while to write the book. But like 5-6 years ago, I started to, journal, and not necessarily like morning pages. It was had a little bit more structure. And I was like, you know, an old therapist used to say, just, you know, when you're feeling, you know, anxious or whatever, just write, just get it on paper, get it out of your head and get it in front of you. Yeah. And so I started to write and write and write. And then something came, like, you know, and I write about this in the book. I've done so many different things to try to figure out where this anxiety comes from, how it operates in my body, whether it's sitting in a, you know, in a silent retreat or taking medication or just, you know, meditating here at home, psychedelic therapy, all these different things. And when I started to look at everything and see what are the commonalities between all these things, because as an anxiety sufferer, I think we try to overcomplicate things. You know, there's always that next thing out there that's going to be the magic pill. And so when I was putting these journals together, you know, looking at these journals, I was like, huh, you know, there's some really basic things, simple things here that people, if they did every day, I think that they, you know, from what I've learned over the years, they could do, and they could really, I think, start to, at the very least, progress down a path to healing, right? And making a step towards healing. So when I put this together, and then I was like, you know, this could be a book. And I think the frustration with writing screenplays and really being like a little stuck in that area, yeah. I'm like, I'm a writer. I'm going to go do this, you know? Yeah. And so it was kind of a pivot.
Are you enjoying today's episode and hearing this author's stories? Just think, a few short months or maybe years ago, this author was just like you. They were an aspiring author with a story to tell, listening to podcasts and reading books that could provide the spark needed to begin their authorship journey. But at some point, they had to take a leap of faith and they had to start their project. That leap of faith is what landed them here on our show. You too can be an author, and one day you can be on this very show. But you need to take that leap of faith. Go to www.visionaryliterary.com/freebook to receive the spark you need to begin your own
authorship journey.
In a combination of going through a really rough time in my life and wanting to put it all down, and then it just kind of crystallized. And I think it, at the point where I didn't really know what to do, I go out to agents, I kind of went backwards. I wrote a proposal after, and I wrote a, what was the other thing I wrote? It was a short proposal. It wasn't like a really, really advanced one. And then a buddy of mine was like, you know, you should meet this guy. He's got a hybrid publishing company. And this gentleman happened to be Tucker Max, who's a very successful writer himself, had a very controversial book. And he was like singing the same things that he kind of, what he said, I was like, I totally understood. He, and you probably know this, he was like, he basically said traditional publishing is dead. It doesn't make any sense for the author. You know, it probably does in some scenarios, but and he really sold me on the idea of hybrid publishing, meaning write it myself and have someone hold my hand through the process, a process that was battle tested by him and many other authors, keep more royalties. And I think also keeping the book in my voice. One thing that he told me is, actually my developmental editor told me, you know, you really, you know, you get a publisher, they're going to change a lot of things, probably including the title of your book. So yeah. I know I'm going to pause there, cause I know that's a lot. No.
Cause you're rolling right into some of the questions that I have about the process. Okay. I just want to hear the story of your process, but
One other thing I want to tell you that's important is that before this company came along, before I met Tucker Max, I had gone way down the road as far as the book. Like I had an initial editor who was kind of moonlighting as an editor, very helpful, but not exactly what I needed. Yeah. Then I got recommended another editor, developmental editor. So this is like the big picture structure, you know, that sort of thing. You know, what are you trying to say? And then the second editor I had did not align with me at all, inundated me with like, read this article, do that. And it was just too much. I was getting more anxious, you know? Yeah. Finally, I did research on some top authors that I respect, looking at what editors they used. And I found an unbelievable woman, developmental editor, who literally held my hand, but was really specific and was really, she didn't pull her punches. I mean, she was really honest with me, which was what I needed. And so she was like, do this. Like, it was exactly what I needed. And she's like, you know, you can take what, you know, you can throw, you know, don't do everything I say, you can do nothing, but this is what I think is going to make your book great. So the developmental editor for me was, that is the relationship you need to find first. Yeah. It is that person's going to make your book better. You know, I went to the company later on, they had their own internal, you know, they read the whole book and then they gave me some thoughts, very minimal, because I had already worked through the whole process with the editor. And that was an unbelievable relationship. You know, they're your therapist, they're your editor, all these things. And so that to me, once I found her, I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Now I can do my work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that had to be a relief. So you're right in that developmental editor stage is so important, because when we think of hybrid publishing or self-publishing, because it's the same thing, you're publishing on your own. A lot of people think of that self as you do everything yourself, but you don't, you shouldn't. I mean, mm-hmm. You can, it is possible, but you really shouldn't. You should get an editor. You should speak with people. And like you were saying, that collaboration with her helped you, because she held your hand through it. But the most critical part is that she, you said, you can take this information or you can leave it. Ultimately, your name is on the cover. You get the last say. If you go the traditional model, like you were saying, if you go through a traditional publishing house, you don't get that. Like your developmental editor said, they're going to change a lot of things. If you go through a traditional publisher, they're going to change your title and, you know, and so forth. So keeping control and being able to have your voice, your stories, and also going to the proposal, right? They could be like, "Who, Chris Gladys, who are you? Like, you're writing about anxiety. Are you a neurologist? Are you a doctor? Are you clinical?" And if you say no, then they might be like, "Well, how do you know what to write on this?" But you, right. You've lived through this, you know. And like you were saying, your experience is how you've overcome so many things. Just, you know them because you live them. You don't have to be a clinician to know that. So many important aspects there. I love that you were able to keep, you know, your title, which I love, your voice inside the book, your stories. So really glad that all formulated by meeting Tucker Max, who, if anyone doesn't know, has a really cool, you know, book and a movie that I saw too. I hope they serve beer and help, but excellent. Yeah,
one other thing I wanted to say, John, is that, yeah, that I think the other big element of developmental editor is really having someone give you honest feedback, because,
yeah,
you know, you can say, I want this, I want that, but you know what? It might not be good. Like, there might be, yeah, parts of, and I, to be honest, I took like 90% of what she said. The biggest thing first was structurally, she was like, your content's here, but it's all over the place. Like, you need to hold the audience's hand through this process.
Yeah.
Some stuff she was like, man, this is tone deaf. Take this out. Like, and it's, you got to be able to, I guess, being in the screenwriting world for so long and getting honest feedback, I was kind of used to that, yeah. But you know, she's read a zillion books. She's edited a bunch of books. So it's, you know, I mean, I trust what she says, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important that you say that too. You have to get the good, honest feedback, because if you give it to a family member or a friend, they're going to be afraid to hurt your feelings, or maybe they've never edited a book, so they don't know that you need to hold a reader's hand through the entire book. So right. Having that, seeing you kept 90% of it, because when you first wrote your first draft, you didn't realize it. And then she opened your eyes and you're like, wow, okay. So now that's why you see in the acknowledgments section of every book, one of the first people that are thanked is the editor, because the editor, she's really, yeah, yeah. The editor always does, you know, amazing work. I've been writing for 17 years. You've been writing for a long time as well. You know how to write, but you just need that second set of eyes. So, yeah, editor's very important.
Yeah. I mean, even like I'm writing a guest blog right now, and I've been working on it for like a week. I mean, it's a guest blog. I've been working on it for like a week and a half, and I'm like, have you ever heard of the site called Readsy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fantastic. That's another source that I've used. So I had a developmental editor, but then copy editing, line editing, you can do book covers through there. And so I get someone to look over my blogs and give me thoughts, because I've never written a blog before and didn't realize it's how informal it is and how you got to make it scannable. And, you know, it's not the flowery writing of a book. And and so, it's a learning process.
Yeah. And Readsy is great too, because everyone, all their freelancers are vetted. So it's not like, you know, Upwork where anybody can just say, I'm an editor. They vet everyone that comes through and that they put on their, on their platform. Absolutely. So Readsy is a great, great marketplace. So a question that I want to ask you before we leave is for the listeners, this is episode number 68, I think. We've had so many successful authors come on here and tell us about, you know, what you should do if you're an aspiring author, where to start with writing, with book writing, with manuscripts. But I want to ask you, when it comes to someone who wants to be a filmmaker, wants to be a screenwriter, wants to maybe create their own short film and kind of get it out there, where does someone like that start? Where do they go? What's your advice?
Well, I mean, back in the day when I first started my path, it was, you know, traditional masters at a film school. You know, there nowadays there are programs that sit outside of traditional schools. Like if you look at the big schools like USC, UCLA, Columbia, you know, those were always the traditional film schools, and they're still great film schools. But now they have, you know, you can do anything online now. I mean, you can, if you've never written before, I mean, obviously you want to get the, you want to learn the tools, like you want to learn what the parameters are and what the, for a screenplay, right? How to structure it, you got to learn the basics. before you even, you know, get into it. I mean, that doesn't mean you shouldn't jot down ideas and brainstorm and all that stuff, but I think developing your skill around that area is probably of utmost importance.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nowadays, there's the other thing I'm looking into is like short stories. Short stories are now selling, and I'm talking short, like flash fiction. They're selling for millions of dollars now, and they don't take a long time. But sometimes when something's shorter, it's even harder to write, you know, because you're trying to get so much information. But yeah, developing the skills would be the first thing. Realizing it's a marathon, not a sprint. I mean, I've been in this for a long time, and there's parts of me that like, I think I should be farther along than I am. And, you know, it's a marathon, and you have to enjoy the process. I know I'm speaking on a lot of cliches, but you have to enjoy the process and not that goal that the Academy Award or any of that stuff. Like it's, you know, to me, that is, I'm sure, you know, when you're writing, you get in this flow and it's just like, things just start clicking and happening. And that's the reward. You know, the last thing I'll say is what I think creates the best art is something that comes from a very personal experience. So, and you know, you can look at the greatest filmmakers, there's a kernel that goes throughout their portfolio of work. And it's usually something that is some sort of angst or something that it could be a wound, it could be, but it's very personal to that individual, because when it's personal, you're going to be passionate about it. And it's going to push you through the tough times when you want to give up, because you're like, this is important, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even for my book, I'd never written a book before, but I was like, I feel this is important. I feel people are struggling, especially after COVID. And to just know that if it's coming from a deep, personal, truthful place, someone else is probably going to connect with it, you know, and it might not be, you know, millions and millions of people. It could be, you know, like, I forget the guy who wrote the article, 1,000 True Fans. Have you read that article?
I haven't, no.
There's a book called 1,000 True Fans, and it's saying that, you know, you really only need 1,000 people to connect with your work, because how it spawns from that into a larger audience. So I gave you, that's a lot. So I hope that's helpful.
Well, no, because it's all meaningful to you, right? And so I appreciate that, because what you're really saying to the listener who's getting started is just do something that you're passionate about and stick with it. Right. So it's like you were saying, it's not, don't look at the Academy Award, the red carpet, you know, being on in there. Just start making stuff that you love. So I love to hear that, you know, your passion has brought you to where you are now. I will place, so people can find you on your website, and they also can find, you know, When Your Mind Screams on Amazon, which I'll place both of those links, inside of the show notes. But where else can people follow along with what you're doing and what's coming next for you?
Sure. Yeah. The website probably, which is just my name, ChristopherGlatis.com. All the links are connected to there. So like social media, I'm just like, I avoided social media like the plague for so long, because I thought, you know, it's really a time suck, and I'd rather be writing, you know, screenplays or that sort of thing. So I'm just starting to kind of get more into that. All those links are within my website. The Amazon link is there as well. And just look out for, you know, I'm going to be on other podcasts coming up, you know, throughout the year. And,
Excellent. Well, for anyone listening or watching, I'll put all that inside of the show description. Chris, thank you for being here, and for congratulations on writing this book. That is something that's, you know, been with you since college, and something that you're really passionate about, seeing it through to the end. For anyone who does, you know, click on the link in the description, you'll see that the cover is amazing. Everything is very high quality and professional. And Chris, thank you again.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that. And I hope people, I hope people get a little tidbit of a nugget of information and inspiration, knowing that they can do this. You can do this. Yeah.
I'm sure they will. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Self-Published Success. We encourage you to put the tips and tricks you've discovered in this episode to use in your own author strategy. Please feel free to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on your preferred listening platform. Until next time, continue chasing your vision of authorship success.